You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 392. On the podcast today, multi-bagger specialist, Top Info. He's a trader, a short-term trader, and he answers some of the questions sent in by some other private investors. Also, CEO of Forbidden Technology, Aziz Moussa, will be answering your questions. And of course, on a Monday, I normally have Doc Holliday, small cap aficionado. Today is no different. He's talking about Premier Oil, Petroceltic, Keffi Minerals, and Pantheon Resources.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tops Info. And I've got to call you, maybe call you Mr. Bag.
Yeah, nice to be back, Justin. I said I'd come back, and it's nice of you to invite me on the show to come back and speak to you.
Well, you know, you are one of the main men, and Big Gib, who's a big investor, done really well. When he was on the podcast the other day, he said you were one of the guys he follows, and I do look at you very honest on your Twitter, and you're a fast trader. You get in there on the news, the RNS, and you hope for a bit of upside there. But I just asked you before we come on. I said, you know, how's it been for you recently? And you said, oh, it's been cracking, and a cracking few weeks. And for most people, this has been the worst couple of weeks ever, probably, in their portfolio. So how are you doing it?
Yeah, well, it's like I say, I am, and I always admit I'm a short-term trader. And so traders love volatility, and that's what's happening at the minute. You've got amazing volatility going on. You've got spikes in share prices. You've got, you know, prices being hammered on news. So that volatility creates a market for traders where you can, you know, make money on that. And I've done okay, yeah. News stories coming out. I've been on top of the news stories when they come out. I obviously sit near my RNS feed. And also some stocks I've bought that really there was no RNS on, but just sort of picked the bottom, and, you know, hopefully some of it is skill, but obviously a little bit of luck you need along the way as well.
Yeah, but you say there's volatility. What happens if you're caught on the wrong side? I mean, do you put a stop loss in or not?
I never put a physical stop loss on any of my accounts because I know sometimes they can spike it down, trigger your stop loss, and then then bring it back up, a bit like a lot of the spread betting firms do, even though they'll deny it. But I just watch. I watch a hell of a lot of stocks. I know where I think the resistance and support levels are. For instance, I bought Moyle on Friday, which is Madagascar Oil. There's no RNS on it. But, you know, I looked at it and it looked pretty cheap at 1.75. So I bought it, and it's doubled today. It's doubled since Friday. It's 3.5 bid, 4 on the offer, and people are paying 4p today.
Yeah, well, I was looking at your last tweet there, and you mentioned that today already you've had a bagger and a half, and half a bag before lunch. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah, and I don't know how long this will last with this sort of volatility and big swings, but Madagascar, yeah, I've obviously doubled that. I was in at 175, it's 3.5 bid. I haven't sold them just yet, thinking about it, but I'll leave that run a little bit longer. But the other one was PTV, and I've got to go on about Vox Markets. I installed the app on my phone on your recommendation. I know that you deal with it or they sponsor you. And it's absolutely brilliant. I can't stress enough how good that is. I'll give you an example. I went out this morning, and it's not very often I leave my desk and leave the RNS feed unless I'm going to hospital, doctor's appointments. I have a bit of a condition going on at the minute that I'm dealing with, so I go out a lot for that. And I was at the doctor's this morning, sat in the waiting room, and Vox Markets sent me a message to say that PTV had come out with an RNS, which was the chairman had resigned. Now, I know that that's very good news for the company, because it looks like we'll now get a new board and shake up the company, and that's sort of the dead wood out. So I went on to my trading account on my phone, bought some shares in PTV, saw the doctor, came home, it was up 50%, sold it, quick trade. Now, without Vox Markets, I wouldn't have had that trade at all. It's unbelievable. I mean, I know it's only in the early stages, but what you do is you create a watch list of all the stocks that you either watch or are interested in. And once it's on the watch list, that any RNS that comes out, it sends it straight to your firm. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be as quick as my RNS machine. If I actually got it while I was sat and compared it, it'd probably be 30 seconds difference, but that matters not. When you're out, you either miss it totally, or so what? You're 30 seconds behind the market, and I managed to buy some PTV under 2.5 and sell them at 3.5. So,
do you know what? It's almost right as if I gave you a script there. And I know this is completely, you know, because that's I would say very simple. Just download the app, you know, set up a watch list, and you'll be sent push notifications by RNS, which is good. Okay. We've had some questions submitted, right, from people, you know, who'd like to be doing what you do. Well, who wouldn't, you know, earning money, sitting at your desk, it's good. So first of all, first question is, what's the minimum amount you invest for these weekly or daily baggers?
Right. Well, I mean, that depends on the stock. You have to look at the stock, and I always look at the NMS or EMS, which is normal market size. Sometimes you can just get what you get. Last week, I bought a company, Fry, FRI, which was Frontier Resources. Again, it had been hit hard recently. There was no reason, maybe as such, to buy it. There wasn't an RNS out, but I thought this is oversold. So I bought some. Now, I'll openly admit, the most I could get was a million. That was it. They wouldn't sell me anymore, which I bought those at 0.066, I think it was. I got a million shares. I tried for more, and I couldn't buy any more. So that's, you know.
How much is that? How much is that?
Well, it was only 660 quid. That's the maximum I could buy. But then it went on to do 200%, you know, in the day. So you know, you're looking at 1,200 quid profit off £600 trade. So, you know, it's still pretty good. Now, if that size would have been 2 or 3 million, then I would have bought more. So you have to be careful. You have to look at the stock, what you're investing in, when trading, when you're looking for short-term trades, and realise that if you go and buy, say, 5-6 times over the normal market size, then you might struggle to sell it when, you know, when it's time to sell. You know, having said that, my normal trade size for a day trade on a normal stock with a decent, you know, a normal market size, I would be looking at £4,000 or £5,000 at a time, and that's the sort of size I'd go in at. But you know, these small companies, you just have to go with what you can get, the normal market size, be happy. I could have bought some more as it went up, you know, 0.1, 0.12, but I was happy with what I got, and it was a decent trade. So look for the normal market size and don't overexpose yourself.
Yeah, okay. Question two, do you invest long term? If so, what's your current long term favourites?
Right, well, as I've always said, I'm a trader, and particularly a short-term trader. I do have a couple of stocks long-term, but to me, a long-term investment is a short-term trade gone wrong. And one example is Aero. I recommended Aero at 5.3p after they had a placing. It went up to 9.5p, and because it was a long-term investment of mine, I decided not to sell, and it's come all the way back down, and it's back to where I bought it. So I've lost out on 90% really on Aero, and that was a long-term investment. So it kind of puts me off long-term trades and investments, because if I look down my accounts, or when, you know, I review what I do, then where I've lost money, it tends to be long-term investments. You know, I'm in them, and then suddenly they come out with bad news, or the sector falls down. So I tend to be short-term, and that can be from a few hours to 2 or 3 days. You know, a good news story, I'll keep a few days, but I don't really like holding things long-term unless I'm absolutely 100% positive about the fundamentals, and that there's going to be nothing bad come out. And there's one stock that I'll mention today that which I'm sort of happy with, and that's, well, I will come to that later if you want.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Okay, then, do you ever opt for a risk-free holding, i.e. get your stake back and then run the rest? So if you say, for example, double your money or something, you know, just take sell half.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, and I have started doing that more often in the last probably 12 months. I used to buy in on news. It would spike up and I'd sell a lot, and then it would probably drop back a bit and then keep going. So when I've doubled my money, and I'm talking about a news story here, I'm not talking about Moyle, which I bought, you know, because I thought it was cheap. There's no news out on Moyle, so I'm quite happy with 100% gain in 24 hours as it is. But, you know, a big news story, say for instance I buy £3,000 worth of stock, it doubles, I can sell my holding, get £3,000 back, and then the rest of them are run for free and there's no risk there, and then hopefully they'll carry on, keep going. So it's a really good method to employ, is that.
Okay, and how do you implement your entry and exit strategies, and how do you do it?
Well, I have a watch list of over 75 stocks that I know a little bit about. I know a little bit about all of them. I know the market caps off the top of my head, and I know where they're normally bought and where they're normally sold. So I look out for those levels, and when they hit them, when they've been oversold, then I look to buy. When they've been overbought, I look to sell. Obviously, I look more detailed about... I have a 10 level 2 order book screens open at the moment, so I'm watching the live trades going through on the stocks that I'm looking to possibly buy shortly. So I look at those in more detail, but at any one time I've got like 75 stocks on watch that I can see trades going through, and I use MoneyAM for that. It's a pretty good stock watch.
Yeah, so ideally, this is a question from either. How many stocks are you holding at the moment, and ideally how many do you like to hold?
Well, at the moment I'm holding about 6 stocks, and they're long term, as in I think they're worth holding long term, or long term because they were short term and they haven't gone up yet. So,
yeah, yeah.
So, but you know, I've got about 6 at the moment. It's always nice to be about, I'd say, 60%, 70% in cash and the rest invested in a market like it is at the moment, where it's so volatile and there is a lot of stocks being hit hard. So, you know, I'm quite comfortable at the moment, and I've got cash to buy new trades, new stories, and whatever comes in.
Okay, listen, we've got a lot of questions left. I want to get you back on because, you know, you're a guy with a lot of demand, so we can cover those questions later. Yeah. I mean, is there any stocks at the moment that pique your interest, you're looking at or you're in, and you think quite interesting?
Well, I don't want to come on here and sound like I'm coming on just to ramp a couple of my stocks and so everyone can buy it and get out. But I'll mention two that I like and why. One of the ones that I've bought recently, and I've bought a decent enough holding, and I'm just happy to sit there, is Antrim Energy. You know, the market cap is just over 2 million. They've got $9.7 in cash, which works out at 3.5p a share. They've got no debt whatsoever, and the cash burn is down to minimum. If you read the RNS on the 17th of November, it'll explain it all in the corporate update. Now, it's 1.25p on the offer at the moment. Not much volume going through it. It's pretty boring at the moment. But I see one or two things happening here. It's going to be very similar to what happened at Fast, where suddenly you get a board member with a decent background come onto the board and then, you know, invest in another alternative business. So in that respect, there's 3.5p in cash. Another option is that they say, well, we're going to wind down the company, going to make the redundancies and then return cash to shareholders, which even after any redundancies, I'm still thinking you've got at least 3p a share in cash, you know, being conservative. So there's a lot of money to be made on that, but I'm not saying to everyone, go out and buy it now. I'm not going to say it's going to double tomorrow, but I'm just sat on a comfortable holding and I know that there's no debt, so there's no demands like these oil companies we've got at the moment, and it's quite a safe bet to just invest a little bit of money, sit back, and hopefully you'll be rewarded for it.
Yeah, and so when you buy shares, do you ever put limit orders in, or do you just buy the quoted price there, or do you wait? What do you do?
Again, I try and set a limit for where I buy. Sometimes I have to adjust that because then you'll see a load of buying in it, and if you sort of quibble, you know, about a few quid, somebody once said to me, don't be a dick for a tick.
Yeah.
You know, you might pay £5 more or whatever, £10 more, you know, you're quibbling about pence. So I set a buy limit, and if it goes up a little bit, then I might have to pay a bit more. But Antrim Energy, I think I'm in around about, I've bought quite a few, I'm around about 1.3 in that. It's not really moving at the moment, but there's 3.5p in cash at least. There's no debt. They own 100% Irish licensed Porcupine Basin, which that in itself's got 1 billion barrel plus potential, but that's worthless at the moment with the oil price. I mean, you know, the best thing they could probably do is offload that for a quid, and then just focus on the cash, maybe a reverse takeover or wind down the company, return cash to shareholders.
Yeah, yeah, okay, cool. Any other stocks you're looking at the moment?
Another one that I really like is React Energy, REAC. Now, again, please don't just go out and buy this because the spread is horrendous at the moment. It's 2p on the bid, 4p on the offer. Now, I did really well with this when it came out with the news. It's had two bits of good news. One was 31st of December and the other one was the 6th of January. And on both of those, I got in really quite quick on the news, bought it. I think the first time it did 100%, the second time it did about 50%, and now it's back down to 3 mid. But I mean, I don't know what the actual real spread is, but this company seems to have turned a corner. And if you look at the long-term chart, it's fallen from a long way. They've recently agreed a development joint venture. And if you read the RNS on the 31st of December, it'll give you all the details. Then they've got a loan, which is €750,000, and that's for towards the development of this Neary biomass. Now, the market cap here is tiny, the potential's massive. But like I said, the share price spread, because of no volume, is very, very wide. So all I would say is just keep an eye on that one, read up on it a bit, see what you think. I really think that this company could do well, and probably my target for that would probably be around 6p. I think it might go up to 6p, but not yet. You know, there's no volume in it, but just keep it on watch, read up on the news and look out for any news flow on it.
Marvellous. And I know people will be listening there. You'll probably see more volume in there today because you've been doing very well of late. And are you getting people now sort of copying your trades? Do you find that?
Yeah, yeah. A few people have said thanks. And it's always nice to, you know, to help people make money. That's all I've ever set out to do ever since I came on ADVFN 11 years ago. I'm not in the business of trying to, con people or tell them to buy stuff just so I can get out. I genuinely like to help people make money, and I'm happy when people say, oh, thanks, Tops, I've just made, you know, this out of this trade that you gave me the heads up. And in other respects, I mean, AFRI came out earlier on saying it was delisting from AIM, so I quickly put it on Twitter. I'm not in that stock at the moment, but for people who are, if they haven't seen the RNS, I put it out literally so they could read it and decide what to do, get out before it delists from AIM. So, you know, I try and help people as much as I can, and I do get enjoyment out of other people making money as well.
Marvellous. Well, listen, Dops, come back on soon. We'll go through the rest of the questions and talk some more. Thanks for coming on again, fella.
Okay, thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Aziz Musa, CEO of Forbidden Technologies, ticker code FBT. Thanks for joining me, Aziz.
You're very welcome. Great to be on, Justin.
We've had quite a few questions submitted by private investors, but for people who are not aware of your company, can you give some background, Aziz, to what you do?
Sure. Forbidden Technologies operates in the cloud video editing space. So what that really means is that we build products that allow people to edit video through a browser. Most people, when they try and edit video, or if you're a professional or just a novice, you have to download some software or worse still, buy a big machine that chunks through all of this video. We do it all in a browser. So we IPO'd on AIM in 1999. We launched our first product in 2004. It's called Foreseen. It's a professional video editor used by Google in the 2012 Olympics, used by a host of sporting events around the world right now, most of which, unfortunately, I can't name due to contractual obligations. Also used by, you know, a large proportion of TV shows that your listeners will see on a Saturday night, a large proportion of them will have foreseen within the workflow. That's our first, our main product, our main revenue driver. And then we have two other products, the soon-to-be-released Captivate, an online video editor for the mass market, for anyone who's got video on their phone that they want to create something with and share with their friends. And Eva, the video social network, which is available now on iOS and soon to be available on Android.
And that's what, a proper video social network, is it there?
Yeah, absolutely. So Eva is essentially Facebook in video. It's full screen portrait video where you can just record. All of your content goes straight up into the cloud. Really, when we envisaged Eva, when we put it together, we wanted to create an asset for the organization. We wanted to have a way of demonstrating just the power that we have within our technology platform. But actually, Eva is now a pretty significant acquisition channel for Captivate. Captivate is a subscription-based product. So if you record videos in Eva, you don't have to upload them to your Captivate account. When you go to Captivate, they'll already be there waiting for you to edit them.
Okay. All right. Marvelous stuff. Well, let's go to some questions from private investors. First one, licensing of the technology has so far not occurred. Is this not the best way for a small company to address the consumer market in partnership with a large multinational company?
It's one of a number of ways to address the consumer market. I think that there are advantages of partnering with large multinationals, and I am in constant discussions with a number of prospects within our pipeline to that aim. But actually, there are a number of disadvantages too. Speed to market, bureaucracy, red tape, lots of things that we need to try and get through. That said, it's not actually on the critical path. I think that the success of Eva is really down to how well Captivate can leverage the Eva user base, and also how we are able with our own internal sales team to sell Eva channels to brands around the world. And if I just quickly explain what an Eva brand is.
Yeah.
You know, just in my background, a lot of it is in marketing. And you know, back in the day, marketing, digital marketing in particular, was really easy. You know, you just bought traffic and it worked, and people bought stuff online, and it was tremendous. Now it's gotten so much more complex with ad blockers, and you know, consumers are so much more sophisticated in how they consume digital advertising, that actually, you know, that's really driven the rise of these influencers. You know, you could consider yourself, for example, to be within that trend, you know, as an influencer within a specific niche. The rise of influencers has driven the rise of what we call authenticity marketing. And that's where Eva is above and beyond everything else. We live in the authenticity marketing space. So we will allow brands to use their customers to create content. So take, for example, Movember. We did a branded channel with Movember, the charity, where we got people to record the progress of their mustache over the month. And then at the end of the month, at the end of November, we took all of that content and we gave it to Movember, and they're using it now across all of their owned and paid media.
Okay.
And that's completely different to any other social network. You can't do that on Facebook. You can't do that on Twitter. You can't do that on Instagram. It's the only social network where a brand can own a perpetual license to all of the content that's created in their channels. So all of a sudden we created, you know, it wasn't the anticipated use case of Eva, to be clear. We thought we were building something simpler, but we are where we are, and we're really excited by the opportunity that it brings, because we're able to kind of disrupt the authenticity marketing space through Eva.
Okay, and on the end of that is a question. But you said you're considering it, or you're in chats with the majors. So would you still consider licensing your technology out to majors, or is that off the cards?
No, it's definitely not off the cards, and we absolutely would consider it. And I think there's another use case that is really powerful for us. You know, I'm not attached to the brand. I'm attached to the technology, and I'm attached to how we can drive our revenues as hard as possible, as quickly as possible. And so one of the use cases that we talk to large multinationals around is just taking Eva as a video social network and entirely branding it as their own brand. So if I use an example of a brand that we are absolutely not in discussions with, just for the sake of cleanliness. So imagine that you are Manchester United and you have 500 million fans all around the world, and you want to engage with that audience, what do? Well, you create your website, you engage with them through Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and you create masses and masses of content that you can't reuse anywhere because Facebook earns it or because Instagram earns it. So what about if you had the Manchester United video social network, and it was branded Manchester United, and you could download it if you're in China, and you could engage with the Manchester United app. And then you could, instead of having channels which were brands, you could have channels which were individual footballers or departments within the Manchester United organization. And then you can start to leverage your 500 million audience backwards into yourself, creating content that not only you own, but that you can reuse across your owned and paid media. So yeah, they're the kinds of discussions that we explore, but they're significantly more speculative, I would suggest, than the channel license, brand. Yeah.
Okay. So, wow, that was a full answer. We got lots of questions to get through. So, that was a good answer there. So, okay, next question. Do we need to be concerned with high internet broadband charges that may occur with free EVA and a free version of Captivate?
No. Particularly on Captivate. Captivate works in JavaScript, and basically it will only work on your, most people will use it on their Wi-Fi. And EVA is a video social network, so its bandwidth usage is slightly more than the average social network, but that's because we purely distribute in video. So no, nothing to be concerned about. It's something we constantly optimize.
Okay. What should investors look out for that would suggest pivotal developments in the company's plan for commerciality?
I think that the first things to look out for are announcements around the changes in organizational structure that I alluded to in previous interviews. We've really moved out of this technology-focused phased organization into a commercially focused organization, and that's requiring a restructuring and a hiring of people within our sales apparatus. Critically, we're going to be moving from 1.8 FTEs in a commercial role to 7 FTEs selling our products. I aim to have that completed by the end of Q1, potentially into Q2. Then give it a little bit of time for those people to ramp up, and then hopefully we'll start to see the deal flow coming through.
Okay. When do the management expect cash flow positive, or to be cash flow positive?
I think over the next couple of years, we expect each of the individual products to achieve profitability sequentially, starting with our main product Foreseen, and then probably Captivate, followed by EVA. Then, we're an AIM listed company, we're a public company, so we have significant charges associated with that, and so it'll be a little bit after that before we see the entire organization achieve profitability. But that's the kind of time frame that we're working to. We may deliberately slow that down if we see opportunities to grow faster in certain niches that require investment.
Okay. When will Captivate launch for paying customers?
March.
Okay. Next question. When will you need to raise more cash?
As a management team, we've got various options in front of us. I'd really like to see how Captivate and EVA revenue starts to impact our finances. And so we'll give it a little bit of time, really, to see how those things impact the business. And then we'll make decisions once we've got more data. I don't think we have enough data to make those kinds of decisions yet.
Okay. Has EVA... In fact, let's go for this one first. Probably one of the youngest public CEOs in the country. Is that a good thing or a bad thing for my investment? But do you mind if I ask, how old are you?
I'm 34.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's a good thing, because it would be a bit stupid for me to say that it was a bad thing. I think that someone did tell me, actually, that the youngest public company CEO in the country is also leads a tech company, and I think that is probably about right. I'm kind of an elder statesman in the tech world. I think I'm 3 years older than Mark Zuckerberg, 5 years older than Jack Dorsey. So I'm pretty old in my space. I think what's more important is the experience that I bring to the table. I think that I built Photobox Australia from zero into a multi-millions of pound business. In under a year, I launched a digital agency and got that into millions of pounds run rate in under a year, and did similar things at lastminute.com. So the experience that I bring to the table is really around taking technology and building business from it. And I also surround myself with incredibly experienced people. Jonathan Lees, our FD, is a veteran finance director from public companies. And also our recently departed chairman, who retired Vic Steele. I've retained him actually as a personal mentor. He's extremely experienced, so I surround myself with people who have experiences that can cover off my gaps.
Yeah, well, you sound like you have, you know, an old head on young shoulders there, so that sounds quite good. So has Eva generated any earnings so far, and what is the visibility for future earnings?
No, it's not generated any earnings. We have had three different channel partners working with us. We really needed to build out those case studies. People can go to our website and see those case studies now. Now we have those three case studies, it's much easier to engage in conversations with brands. Sorry, what was the second half of the question, Justin?
Earnings that may come from... can you give us an idea of potential revenues or earnings that may come from Captivate?
Yeah, I think that... Captivate, I think, is potentially a multi-millions of pounds business. And, you know, it's easy for a CEO to come onto your show and say that. And so I just encourage people to do the same research that I did before we even started coding Captivate. And you can do it all yourselves. The biggest player in our space is a company called WeVideo. You can go to their website, WeVideo.com. You can use a product like SimilarWeb. It's a free product. Go to SimilarWeb.com, search WeVideo, and it'll show you roughly how much traffic WeVideo gets. And it'll say something like 28 million visits in the last year. And then you can just start to apply your own conversion rates. Progressive Research released a bit of research on us last week. At the back of that is a ready reckoner where you can put in a traffic number, you can put in a conversion rate, you can put in an average revenue per customer and get to a number in terms of potential revenues. So I'd really encourage people to do that. Then I'd encourage them to use WeVideo, go to Captivate, use Captivate, and see which one you think is, see which one you'd be more inclined to pay for. All of our research suggests that people are more inclined to pay for Captivate. So I'd be very disheartened if over the span of its lifetime we weren't able to get it into multi millions of pounds.
Yeah. What progress has been made in commercializing sports?
Lots of progress. I think last year we had a number of announcements. The challenge we have in sports is that we're very rarely allowed to say what sport it is that we're actually working on. So we have to say really crazy things like, you know, we're working on a major sporting event in Augusta, as if everyone doesn't know exactly what that we're talking about, or a major event in Twickenham with a ball. You know, most people know what we're talking about, but we're just never actually allowed to name the event. I think that I can't preempt the results that we'll release, but I think that we overperformed against our own expectations in sports last year, and that's a major part of our growth going forward.
Yeah. Next question is, can you give us an idea of how much revenue has increased since half year report?
No, I cannot, because that would be against AIM rules. I don't just say that, I actually believe in the rules that govern our society. Yeah, so, yeah.
Exactly, we can't. I mean, it's true. I mean, it's someone fishing there. Yeah, but, you know, it's a harmless question, but you can't answer it. Okay, is there a chance that one of the bigger players like Avid, Adobe or Apple would be interested in acquiring FBT?
That's a really good question. I think, I'm going to say that it's more likely that we would want to license the technology rather than sell it. And if you just give me a moment, I'll try and explain why I believe that. I think that the market is basically dominated by those three companies, Avid, Adobe, and Apple. And if you played out just basic game theory logic, you'd see it this way. If Avid came to the table today and said, we would like to buy Foreseen or Forbidden Technologies, what they would essentially buy is a competitive advantage that would make their product surpass everyone else in the market significantly. It would be a step change in what they could offer to their customers. So what that would mean is that Apple and Adobe would have no choice but to try and replicate the competitive advantage. They've tried it in the past and they've not been able to. We have patent protections that basically mean that we're significantly ahead of all three companies in this ability to edit in the cloud. But they would still have to try. So from that perspective, as a CEO, I look at that as an opportunity, because actually if you license it to one of the three, the other two absolutely have to license it from you, because you've created a disparity of product offering within the market very deliberately. So is it likely? I don't think it's ever likely that happens. I don't think we're not courting that. I just think that from an academic perspective, if one came in, they'd all have to come in.
Yeah. Okay. This next question is slightly inaccurate because I've been looking at the chart here. Can you explain the massive fall in share price over the last year or so, even though it seemed things have never looked brighter? I'm looking over a year, and you're at 11.5p right now, and going back a year, pretty much it did peak around about then. But I suppose over a couple of years, it has come down. So things are looking bright. Why is the share price down?
Yeah, I think back at the peaks that you're probably looking at a couple of years ago, we were in a really different place. We only had a single product, whereas now we have three products that we're able to offer to the world. And I think, can I explain it? I can't explain it. I think that the share register tells us some things which are interesting around, you know, people have positions that they need to move out from for various reasons that not necessarily to do with the company. And you know, our share structure means that we're quite vulnerable to those kinds of changes. So that's probably one of the reasons. I'm likely to say that I think that their share price represents value because I'm the CEO. But I can't really give an explanation beyond that.
Okay, here's get your crystal ball out, Aziz. Where do you see Forbidden Technologies in 3 years?
3 years is kind of a long time horizon for a technology company. I've been here 18 months and we've changed significantly in that time. I think where I want to be is I think that this is a tens of millions of pounds company. I want to be, let's make a commitment, Justin, that you and me at 12:49, 3 years from today, we'll be talking about Forbidden Technologies and hopefully we'll be talking about, a significantly bigger business than we're talking about right now. So that's what I aspire to.
Okay, I'll put that date in the diary and send you an invite for that. Cool. Has revenue increased sufficiently enough yet to be able to cover cash burn?
I can't really answer that question, I think, because it's kind of similar to the previous question.
Yeah.
I think that, like I said, as a management team, we look at that all the time. I'm really just keen to see what impact Eva and Captivate will have on our cash position before making any decisions.
Okay. When can we see the release of an Android version of Eva?
Yeah. We will release Eva in very small stages, so single device across a single Android version, probably starting in February. You're able to get to a beta program now, so if anyone wants to sign up to a beta program on Android, again, just tweet at Eva application and we'll set you up as a beta user.
Okay, what was the reason for a change of Nomad? When was that, in December, was it, I think?
I think that Nomads are horses for courses. Some are more appropriate to bigger companies, some are more appropriate to smaller companies. Senkos and Bob, who we had as our Nomad, were tremendous. I really enjoyed working with them. I've got a very personal affinity, I think, with Nick Naylor at Allenby. They're really great guys. They're very enthusiastic about our business. They're very enthusiastic about what we bring to the market. So there's no reason other than it's like horses for courses.
Okay, and the last question. Is Forbidden going to introduce more privacy settings on Eva so that only your approved followers will be able to view your videos?
Yes.
All right, simple as that. Okay, marvellous. We covered a lot of questions there, but if anyone needs, a little bulletin point to sort of round up, Aziz, if you can give us three reasons why someone should think about investing in Forbidden Technologies, please.
Firstly, we operate in a market that is growing massively and has been doing for a number of years and will continue to do so. Video is the medium of communication. It's growing significantly. Secondly, we are forefront in this market. We launched the first cloud video editing solution in 2004, and we've we won an innovation award for that same technology last year. So I think that, we're right on the front of that. Of that market, and we have patents that protect ourselves in that market too. And thirdly, and more importantly, because we've just entered a really critical pivot point as an organization, we have moved, or we are moving in this quarter and to some extent part of last quarter, away from being a technology-driven company to being a commercially-led company. It's a tried and tested pivot that a number of companies have done in the past. So I'd really encourage people to look at our business, look at our technology. If you believe in our technology, if you believe in my management team, then get behind us.
Marvellous. Thank you very much for coming on. And, it seems like you're very fired up about your company there, and you've got lots of things going on. So listen, come back on when you have a bit more news, and we'll do another interview with you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is small cap aficionado. It's Doc Holliday. You all right, Doc?
Hello, how are you today, Justin?
I'm all right, yeah. Just, looking at some of the news coming out. I mean, what are you looking at? Anything takes your fancy?
I see one of the most talked about companies at the minute on chat boards and chat sites is Premier Oil. I think we've touched on it before. They had a recent note come out on the company which valued the business at 55p on its return to the market, or potentially that 55p would be justifiable if trading were to resume today. So, you know, take it with a bit of a pinch of salt, but in a better climate than when it's suspended, clearly people believe that the business's valuation is extremely better than perhaps when it's suspended. So, yeah, significantly higher on its return. And there seems to be a lot of people chattering about it. Some are a bit unsure, what will happen when they come out of suspension, and others are excited and enthusiastic at looking for its return.
Yeah, I mean, are you wary now of oil, you know, generally? Like, literally, do you double take on most oil stocks now before you even try to invest? Are you sticking away from oil, or are you, doesn't bother you?
Nah, it's really making a difference. The idea is if you've got a balanced portfolio, or you've got a kind of strategy which is robust enough, it can take most things. Naturally, I'm off the high points in my own portfolio by, I think, about 8%. Tomato, it's not the end of the world. I've been at a much bigger kind of deficit off the high points in the past, and I'm sure I will be again in the future. But the idea is, over the period of time, we're incrementally building and growing. Sometimes adopt a bit of a rock and roll attitude to risk, and it can land you in a few sticky situations. But on the whole, not particularly. I think companies like Premier Oil, they're a bit of a gimme, because I think we're going to look back on businesses like that, and you're going to see a very different story. On the flip side, you look at businesses like PetroCeltic, a company I wrote about, as a company to sell at 30 or 40p at the turn of the year, over on the share profit. That tanked down to about 8 or 9p on news of a potential takeout. It rallied up on Friday to about 17, 18p. I still don't think it's one to be buying, and I think the reasons have played out with businesses like Afren. The debt now will control what happens to that company, and I can't see why anybody would want to be buying the debt by buying the stock in the market, when they know if they leave them, keep pummeling them against the ropes, they'll go down eventually, and that's when they'll come in and offer a reduced amount for the assets direct to the creditors. Just the way these things work out. So, you know, two very different stories, very similar companies. I'm also hearing a lot of people are uber bullish on Pantheon Resources. It's been put to me that I've got the wrong end of the stick. I kind of think, you know, we talked on Value the Markets about the site, on the site, about Pantheon at 18, 20p, got up to 150. Out on Instagram, and again, I penned an article at 130, 120 to say it had come off, and it did. So we got to 74p last week. Whilst people are kind of reveling in the decline and buying the dip, I'm hearing a lot of bullish stories about it. I don't think I can go really wrong from where we've called it. If it got over 150, 4 or wherever it got the last time, it formed up a new high, you'd probably suggest then that we're going to start to see a new level created. The value of the company then would be 250, 300 million market cap. Just don't know how it can warrant it. As I say, I stand by my call. I think a lot of the good news has been priced in. The capex on the onshore asset's going to be significantly cheaper than many, many others. And they've got good cash costs on the barrelage, but yeah, I mean, I'm not overly joyed about that particular one either.
Yeah, do you know what? Looking at the chart there, sort of on a technical level here, it's 90 pence looking at, and that is essentially just below the bottom of the gap. So they may see, you may see some resistance there. You might be right, it may go lower there, but it needs to break that resistant gap to move up, I think. So anything else, Doc? I mean, when you say a balanced portfolio, are you mindful of sectors? So like I said, I know you're into resource sectors quite heavily, but do you try, if you've got quite a few resource sectors in your portfolio, do you try and look elsewhere, like into tech or maybe retail or whatever?
Only if it really catches my attention, but I'd rather sit on cash. You know, for me, I balance my portfolio with the cash position. So, you know, in just before Christmas, I scaled back dramatically on everything. So I still held majority of the companies I'd held before, but it was relative to the amount that was invested in the market. And just hold a really big kind of cash pile, and it just allows you to take the opportunities of the likes of Premier Oil, BP, Genel, the ones we've already talked about. And it also gives me a bit of an insurance policy that should the worst case scenario play out, if we get down to $15 oil, there used to be an old kind of kid story, wasn't it, about, I think it was chicken licking and the world's falling in and all the rest of it. You know, if the doom and gloom actually does come to fruition, I should be in a relatively good position. But then again, you know, we could be like an Eastern European Bulgaria 20 years ago, where you need a wheelbarrow full of cash to buy a loaf of bread. So, yeah, you know, how good is the cash really? That's when I start to think along the line of maybe I need to hedge a little bit here. We look at companies that, like, we seem to be going over old ground here, but likes of Kefi and businesses like that, that I've got all day, you know, piling big sums of cash in, really good uplift all costs and all in the all-in cost on the gold ounce, and you look at things like that, maybe just splash a bit that way. But yeah, I mean, for me, I prefer to hold cash. It's a hard art actually to master, because in the early days I always felt like I needed all of the money to be out in the market working for me, and I actually found that when anything bad in the world happened, it was the most difficultest thing to do was to get back and scale out of those positions, particularly when you're in the small cap markets, because if you've got any size position, you need mass liquidity to get those positions scaled back. It becomes like a really, really difficult juggling act. So just try and be a bit, take preventative measures ahead, really. And I think, you know, for some people, you could argue that, you know, this was on the cards. If it doesn't pick up literally in the next week or two, I'm seriously thinking about going all to cash and just taking the rest of the year off.
Wow. So what percentage of cash are you in your portfolio?
I think I got to about 85%, but I've started to, you know, scale back.
85% in cash?
Yeah, I was about that, yeah, at one point.
Wow, that's quite a bearish outlook, isn't it, I suppose?
No, that was due to a number of kind of circumstances, really. I wanted to realign and change the way that I had money invested in the markets as well, for a whole host of reasons. So, you know, I'm considering going down the kind of trust route and setting something up, you know, for my children, things like that, to try and find a sensible way and a more tax efficient way to have exposure within the markets. Obviously, you know, the likes of ISIS and things like that, you know, I'm always kind of building them things up, but you know, I'm not that savvy when it comes to these things. So I was taking a bit of counsel on a few things, and the safer, most, you know, easiest thing to do was to try and get into a decent cash position so I could make the changes I wanted to make, or I felt that, you know, I wanted to consider making. So it's pretty much that, really, and the fact that the markets were really bad. I didn't want to go over Christmas spending, you know, loads of time looking at the markets, and you know, I only have one, possibly two breaks a year, Christmas being one of them. Yeah, summer holiday, I've now refused to take any devices away with me and try to make sure I don't have great exposure, because I don't, everybody needs a break, we all deserve one.
Yeah, all right, marvellous stuff, Doc. Well, listen, I'll speak next week, fella. Thanks for coming on again.
No problem. Speak again soon.
That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, download the Vox Markets app. As you heard, Tops there, who's a trader doing very well in these markets, made money just because he had the app. He was out away from his desk there, and he got the RNS. So all you need to do is go to the App Store, or in fact, go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app. and download whichever you've got, Android or iOS there, and set up a watch list. And then what happens is you'll be sent any information companies on that watch list release straight away within seconds to the front screen of your smartphone. And you can share or act upon that information right away. So it's foxmarkets.co.uk/app. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados, huh?
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.